All right, let's call the Judiciary Committee meeting to order. We have Senator Dyson with us today. You have Senator McGuire, Senator Wilkowski, and Chairman Coghill. The order of business today will be Senate Bill 173. There's a new CS. If you look in your packet, Senator Meyer has brought us that. Edra will be explaining that to us. The next thing we'll do is Senate Bill 187. It's a confidential information on child welfare issues. That's a bill that I have by request that Reneva Moss, my chief of staff, will be bringing to us. Then Senator Dyson, you will have 186 up. And then at the end, Senate Bill 200, which is Senator McGuire's bill. So, Edra, if you want to come forward, we'll take 173 up. And we have Senator Dyson. The newest CS for this is the C version, if I recall correctly, Edra. And so if you, this is Senate Bill 173, and it's the C-317-14 version. If you wouldn't mind making a motion, and I'll just object so that we can have the hearing on it. That is version C.
C?
Yes.
Charlie?
Charlie.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we have as our working document CS for Senate Bill number 173. That's the 28LS1242/C version.
And I will object so that we can have the differences explained to us. And my intention is to remove my objection unless you guys have further discussion. So, Edra, please.
Okay. For the record, Edra Morledge, staff to Senator Meyer. Good afternoon, Chair Coghill, members of the committee. The CS that you have before you today, which is version C, I don't know if you want me to...
And we have Senator Meyer join us. Please join us, Senator Meyer. We just got your bill on the table, and Edra was just beginning to make the explanations to us. So if you want to make any opening comments.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, I apologize for being late. We're making a change to SB 64, so I think you can relate to
which
that.
The chairman is deeply grateful.
Okay.
So please continue, Edra.
Okay. Once again, Edra Morledge. So version C that you have before you today made basically two changes. First of all, what we did was on beginning on line one of the new CS, version C, we added the word possession to be one of the prohibited actions with synthetic illicit drugs. We carried that into line five on page one also. A person may not possess, offer, display, market, advertise for sale, or sell an illicit synthetic drug. At the previous meeting, it was pointed out that that was lacking, and so we wanted to clarify that the sponsor had intended for possession to be illegal.
Okay.
The next change that we made is on page 2, and you won't find it in version C because we removed it, but it was in version N, the previous version, lines 16 and 17. We removed that subsection F because it spoke not to the characteristics of a synthetic drug, but rather the actions of a person, and so we didn't feel that it fit. And as we discussed that more with the drafter, we just decided to remove that subsection altogether. Those are the two substantive changes that we made, but I did, if you would like me to, I can address a little bit some of the concern that there was about the illegalization of legitimate substances such as...
Okay. At this point, is there any objection to, any further objection to adopting this as a CS? Well, I'll remove my objections. That'll be the document before us. And so if you'll explain some of those questions, and then we can go forward from there.
Sure. In speaking with both the city prosecutor in Anchorage, who did a lot of research in implementing this ordinance in Anchorage, and also our drafter, basically what this bill does is it requires a synthetic drug to meet two criteria in order for it to be deemed illicit. And the first criteria is on page 1, subsection B1. The synthetic drug, the labeling, must meet one of those three A, B, C criteria. If it does meet one of those, then it also must meet one or more of the following on page 2, beginning on line 1, down through the beginning of page 3, line 4. So if it meets one from each of those sections, then it would be deemed an illicit synthetic drug. So something such as synthetic caffeine or a Red Bull or echinacea or golden seal, something like that that advertises health benefits or relaxation, the labeling of those substances would still have to have the manufacturer's name, how it's to be ingested, what the dosage is, those sorts of things. So it wouldn't meet any of the criteria from Section 1, so therefore those wouldn't be considered illicit.
Any questions for the sponsor, Senator Wilkowski?
Yeah, thank you. Good changes. I think it's you've definitely tightened it up a bit. Maybe a question for law, Mr. Chair, on Section G. Let's see, page 2, if that's now's the appropriate time.
Yeah, no. Who from the Department of Law has been working with you on this one?
I have requested both Annie Carpinetti and Corey Mills.
Okay.
So I'm not sure.
Well, Annie's right there.
So Annie's in.
Oh.
So I saw her getting paper off of the. So. Okay. Also, I do have one person online that wanted to give a short testimony, which we can do after we get the Department of Law, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Let's get the Department of Law up here. And I have a feeling we have Kelly Farquhar online in Florida. So just for what it's worth, I wanted to give her a few minutes to testify. But if Annie, you want to join up here, and it looks like Edra is going to stay up here with you. So
yes, please.
All right. Senator Wilkowski, the question and then the answer, Department of Law.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Carpinetti, just looking at page 2, lines 19 through page 3, lines 4, and meant to ask this at the last hearing, didn't get a chance, we got timed out, but I've never seen a provision like that where a prosecution could be based on street names. Is that a usual provision? Is it? Do you see issues with that? I'm just wondering how you, in a court case, would prove a street name, and whether that's something that is appropriate to do.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilkowski, I've never seen this, so I don't know how it would work. It says this has one or more of the following street names. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's labeled with one of these names. So I think it might be a difficult element to prove. But, you know, I certainly defer to to the sponsor in that regard.
Sure. Edra, you want to go ahead and talk?
Sure. Edra Moreledge again. Again, if it fell under G, it would still have to meet one of the three criteria on page 1. And we did have some discussion with the drafter about listing all of these names, and the reason for listing them at this point was because those are actually known packaging labels, and so by listing them, they're immediately illegal, and you don't have to go through proving any of the other criteria.
One thing that you might consider, and I don't mean to be stalling or anything, but you might want to consider is labeled with one of these names, so that you know you might get. My concern about this is that it doesn't. First of all, it doesn't require a label, which would be an easy fix, and you might say, at least in regard to paragraph G, that the label, or it somehow connected with a street name. That I mean, I don't know anything about these substances personally, but you could get anything and have somebody say, "Oh, that street name is Bonsai Grow or something." So I hope that answers your question.
Just for the committee's information, we've been joined by Senator Olson. Thank you, Senator Olson, a few minutes ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
While we're pondering that, is there any other questions? I think labeling might be a good way to move forward on that. But I do have one person to testify, and what I'd like to do is give this lady from Florida a chance to give her testimony. So is she still online? Kelly, can you hear us?
If it is labeled and.
Yes, sir.
I think this bill is going to move fairly well, but you're sure welcome to give us a couple of minutes of the testimony. We sure appreciate you taking the time to call in. Put yourself on.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and I live in Florida, and I'm in a child that I only have 3 minutes, but this killed my son. He was 18, perfectly healthy, and in one breath, his life was over. He was not a drug addict. You guys need to understand how important it is to remove this from the street. Children can buy this in the store. We don't have this law in Florida. It's illegal here, okay, but we still fight the battle every single day because we're not doing what you're doing. It's so important. You need, if there, it serves no purpose whatsoever to have it. And I know it's hard to get the wording right. I know you guys are trying to do everything you can so that you can prosecute the way that you need to. But if you hurt their pocketbook, they will not sell it. It will not be their problem solved. And it's so, so very important that you do this because it will save children's lives because they go to this thinking that they can buy it in a store. It's less than $10. And they think it's safe because they can buy it in a store like a piece of bubble gum. And that's what you guys really need to realize that you're doing is you're taking that ability away. If they can't sell it and make money, the children can't get to it. And that's what matters the most. And I just, please don't stop. Get your wording right, but please pass this bill.
Thank you, Kelly, very much. And we thank you for taking your time and sharing this story with us. And it puts a lot of weight into what we're doing here. So I greatly appreciate that. So with
well,
that,
there's the issue that my son's death is deemed undetermined because there are no laws for testing for this either. This law will open the doorways for that also. So it's going to help in a lot of ways to get this off the street. So what you guys are doing, and it will set the precedent for other states. This is worldwide. I mean, it's unbelievable how this is everywhere. I didn't know anything about it. And boom.
Thank you very much. Kelly, we're going to move on to taking a look at this bill, and we're going to try and get it up to the full body as soon as we can. So we really appreciate you taking the personal experience and putting it to work here. Senator Wilkowski.
Question for law, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
I know we've passed a number of these bills over the years, and my recollection is we had a higher penalty. And so by passing this bill, are we under, I thought it was a felony. I thought it was a low-grade felony. And but I mean, can you talk about that? I know there that issue's been brought up. We have the law on possession, and so are we changing the other law that we have, or do we need to remove that from the books by the passage of this?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilkowski, well, we do have controlled substance, artificial controlled substances law, and although I this is definitely a lesser penalty. I mean, the concern would be to avoid any overlap with that, because those are, even as they passed out of this committee, higher penalties, and this is just a violation. So there would be a concern about that, but I think there are different elements in it. So the drug 1173 does not require labeling or mislabeling. So there are some different elements. That is, I agree with you that it's important to make sure that there's no overlap in those two areas.
Senator Wilkowski, anything else?
I'm trying to look it up. The problem, we have 2012 statutes, Mr. Chair, and I think we've passed a lot of these in the last couple of years, and so we don't have them in the updated statutes. But I know, I thought we had discussed this. Maybe it was a different bill. I think we had a harsher penalty for possession, if I'm recalling correctly, and I...
So, maybe I can ask Edra, because I know this has been something that that particular office has been worked on, so let me ask Edra on that particular point. So, Edra?
Okay, Edra Moreledge again. Section 1173.010 is the manufacture or delivery of an imitation-controlled substance. This is 2013 Alaska statutes, which states a person may not manufacture, deliver, or possess with an intent to deliver an imitation-controlled substance. So that is speaking actually to the compounds that are in the substance, whereas we're targeting the labeling that's in it. But it's also not just straight possession as we have in our legislation. It's possession with the intent to deliver. So it's more of the trafficking.
And is there a possession? Is there an amount on that, how much you have to have, or is it just any possession at all?
It's any possession, yeah. Okay.
So if someone possesses, you now have a conflict in law, right? Just so we all understand what we're passing here, Mr. Chair. We're passing a law that's in conflict
with another
law.
If somebody possesses with intent to deliver, it's a violation of imitation-controlled substance. Okay. If somebody mislabels and possesses, it's a violation of this law, illicit synthetic drugs.
So the... Can you read me, and I don't have the book here because it's 2012 books here. Can you read me the language, please, on possession to deliver and how you prove, or how you prove?
For imitation?
Yeah.
Yes, sure.
And is that a felony? Well, if you guys don't see a problem with it, you're the prosecuting attorneys. If you don't see a problem with it, then I'm probably not going to have a problem with it either. But.
Well, you know, I understand your concern, which is, you know, otherwise, so if there's an overlap, offense. It's a lesser included, and we couldn't press, you know, we would not be able to obtain a conviction for the more serious. Imitation controlled substance prohibits a person from manufacturing, delivering, or possess with intent to deliver an imitation controlled substance. And that is under current law, it's a C felony, Class C felony, but under Senate Bill 66, I believe that's the bill, it would be a misdemeanor for the first and second offense.
So. Actually, this is a $500 fine, right?
Yeah. Yes, this illicit drugs is a violation.
Yeah. And it looks like this is to go primarily to the marketing of these types of things, so a very, very different approach. To Edra, if on line 19, page 2, after the word drug on sub G, if we put is labeled as or has one of the more following street names, would that be an okay amendment for you guys to move
Chair
forward?
Chair Coghill, yes, we'd be amenable to that.
You see, the committee see what I was talking about?
Yeah.
If we put after drug is labeled as or has one or more of the following street names, I would move this. It has to be as a conceptual amendment, unfortunately, but. After the word drug on line 19, page 2, put in the word is labeled as or between the word drug and has. Any objection to that? Okay, so the consensual amendment number 1. I'm sorry to have to do this to our people who record us, but.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask legal if that solves their. Any issues they might have? If you still reference a street name, I'm just thinking of proving a case and how you're going to prove a street name. If you have a label, that's something, you know, you've got a product and you've got a label right on it. Does the amendment solve your issue?
I think it helps. I would also suggest that you say that this under page 1, line 7, that the drug is illicit if it is labeled and the label. Because otherwise, it doesn't require a label, really. It just
Actually, that's not true because line 8, it is the label.
Right. I was talking about line 7.
Right. But, I mean, that's one of the requirements, though.
I see.
So I would say that if we leave that language there and add the label under sub G, then it's consistent.
Mr. Chair, so just on that point, think what Ms. Carpinetti is saying is that if it doesn't have a label, then it couldn't be misleading it. So I sort of see your point.
It's a really minor point, I have to say.
But if you have a product that doesn't have a label on it, then what could you prove be page 1, line 7 through 12? Because you don't have a label on it.
Right. That was my concern.
But to be fair, and I know I don't want to defend the maker of the bill entirely, but in sub A we have the packaging or labeling. We have under G is labeled as now. We have a suggested label in sub B and all the requirements for that label. So I think that if we're, you know, I don't think that's as ambiguous as said. For what it's worth. So, anyway.
I predict we'll be back next year with a different bill, Mr. Chair, to clarify it.
This is the stay in the legislature retirement plan, right? My intention was not to have a whole lot more discussion on this bill. I think yes, ma'am. I'm sorry. Did you have something more, Department of Law? Any?
No, thank you.
All right.
Just here to
any other questions? I'd entertain a motion.
Thank you. Chairman, I move that we move Senate Bill for Senate Bill 173 as amended out of committee with the fiscal note, if any. With individual recommendations.
Is there any objection to moving the bill from committee with individual recommendations as amended? All right. So CS for Senate Bill number 173 is amended. It's moved from committee with individual recommendations and any attached fiscal notes. We'll take a brief. Let's bring the Judiciary Committee back to order. We have Senate Bill 187, which is the next bill on our list. This is on child welfare confidential information. It's a bill that I've sponsored by request. I have my chief of staff, Reneva Moss, who will give you the explanation. Reneva.
And Mr. Chairman, we do have a CS version N.
Yes, that's right. That's a version U.
Version N.
N, I'm sorry. Senator Dyson, would you...
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept as our working document a CS for Senate Bill 187. That's the backslash N version.
All right, and I'm just going to object so that Reneva can tell us what this is and why the difference. Reneva.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Reneva Moss, staff for Senator Coghill. The original bill includes some language that would have added under endangering the welfare of a child in the second degree another statute that actually is already on the books as an aggravator. So we've taken the first four sections of the original bill out because it's not needed.
Okay.
So what this bill now addresses is the actual incident that occurred in the Valley last year where an attorney, gave the defendant a video, and that video was given to a family member, and then it ended up on YouTube. So what this does is it makes a Class A misdemeanor under misconduct involving confidential information in the first degree for anyone who distributes or publishes audios or videos of interviews of children for criminal and child protection investigations, and it also entails distribution of photographs from medical exams. And then the rest of the bill takes you through three different court rules that includes that language for confidentiality, and two of them are under the criminal rules and one is under China. And then there's an applicability and an effective date. It's a very basic bill that was brought to us by the Alaska Children's Justice Act Task Force. You can use mine.
Mr. Senator Dyson, can I use that book real quick? Okay. All right. Never mind. We got it. So I think Senator Wilkowski has a question.
I was just checking to see what 1141-410 through 1141-440 were, Mr. Chair.
Which tab was that again, Senator?
I was just checking to see what 1141-410 through 1141-440 were.
I can give you an answer to that, Senator.
It's the sexual abuse statutes, looks like, Mr. Chair. It is sex offenses. 410 is sex offenses in first degree.
Second, third, and fourth.
Second, third.
And sexual abuse of a minor in the first, second, third, and fourth.
And these are the ones that are allowed to be interviewed under the Children's Advocacy Centers and are videotaped so that the court will have a record of them.
Mm-hmm. And what this does, Mr. Chair, is it puts it in the hands of the attorney, and the defendant is allowed to see the evidence, but the defendant is not allowed to have physical possession of the evidence.
Yeah, that's good.
There are also a couple of exceptions by request, because these videos, and this would be by permission of the victim or the parent or guardian of the victim, these are used for training for interviewers, for law enforcement officers. So there are some provisions for exceptions in the bill, and that is on page,
That is on page 2, lines 19 is one of them, right? And page 13, sub B. So it's section 2.
Yeah, for parameters of consent.
Correct?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not seeing it. Oh, I'm sorry. It's on page 3.
Well, you're looking on another version besides the N version.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes, it is page 2.
Okay. Senator McGuire.
Just to clarify, and maybe I would assume it's embedded in here, but it doesn't read clearly that way yet to me. Page 2, so on that exception sub C, so it has to be with the consent of the victim or the minor's parent or guardian, unless the parent or guardian is the perpetrator, which makes sense. But what if the parent or guardian is the perpetrator? Then shouldn't we make it clear that a minor doesn't consent?
Through the chair, Senator McGuire,
I guess
that would be a policy call that you could certainly add. I think what it says there is if the parent or guardian is the perpetrator, then the information would not be released. There would be no one to give permission.
Yeah, I looked at it that way the first time I read it through the chair, Reneva, and then I read it again, and I just want to be sure, I wanted other members to look at it too, to be clear that it didn't default back to one again, so that if the minor parents or guardians happen to be the perpetrator, then that it wouldn't fall back to the victim being able to give consent, even if that victim was a
through
minor.
The chair, Senator McGuire, what you may want to do is insert the word adult victim.
Yeah. I like that.
On the sub I on line 19?
Yes.
Or is that 18 or 19?
It's line 18.
So that way, if it would not apply unless an adult victim gave the permission.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that a young minor could, but this would clarify it for sure.
Mr.
Senator Wilkowski.
Different topic, if I could.
Okay, different topic.
So I think the court rule is clear. I'm concerned about attorneys transferring within their law firms or maybe secretarial staff looking at these things. It looks like we're criminalizing distribution, so someone's a defense attorney, they get a copy of this, they give it to their secretary to maybe transcribe the interview. It would appear to me by the plain reading of this that they have distributed an audio copy and they've broken the law. I think the court rules say that's not the case, but I think the law in statute says that we do, and maybe that's a question for that law can answer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Walikowski, I had the same concern when I read that.
Okay.
All right. Make note of that question, and what we'll do is we'll bring this back for discussion on that, and the Department of Law can also look at that. Senator Walikowski.
Another point, Mr. Chair, on the applicability section, page 5, it says it applies to criminal proceedings pending on or arising after the effective date, and so I'm trying to envision a scenario where a criminal proceeding could be pending, where you could prosecute someone for maybe committing this act before the law actually went into effect. So I'd be curious to hear law's interpretation of that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilikowski, that would be good to have. My interpretation of it is that the defendant hasn't been convicted yet. So upon conviction, this would apply.
Yeah. My only, you know, we can't create a law to punish conduct that previously occurred. So I guess I'd just be curious to maybe talking that through with law at some point, Mr. Chair.
Well, let's bring this back Friday with that question in mind, plus whether we need to put adult in on page 2, line 18.
And then, Mr. Chairman, the other concern is on page 4, lines, actually it's page 3, line 30, through page 4, line 3, to see if that can be tightened up a little.
Oh, with regard to the transfer?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions? So my expectation then is to bring this back before the committee with us at least reporting those questions and any other questions that Department of Law might be able to come up with. And I am going to have Quinlan Steiner and Rodney Dial, who will be available for questions next time we meet. But at this point, unless either Rodney Dial, Lieutenant Dial, or Quinlan, you wanted to say anything at this point, my intention is to bring it back Friday. Any of you have something that you wanted to bring in?
Mr. Chairman, this is Lieutenant Dial. I can wait until the next hearing.
All right, thank you. Quinlan? All right. Okay, so what we'll do is we'll hold the Senate Bill 187 over to the next time we meet, and we'll bring that up. My intention at this point is to bring up Senate Bill 186. Thank you guys for the information on that and the help on that. Mm-hmm. I think it's an important thing for us to get done. Right now is Senator Dyson. Did you want to be? Okay, Senator Dyson, 186 is before us.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like my Chief of Staff, Chuck Kopp, and Annie to come up. Can you come up, please, Annie?
Okay, and I do have Department of Health and Social Services, Chad Hope in Anchorage online, and Ron Hale, Hospital Administration for API online.
Amazing. All right. I don't think we're going to get through this one today, but that if you look at the bill, it's changing four words to three, mm-hmm. and you got to say, why? What's going on here?
Right.
So the history of this is amazing, but 1982, the legislature did a huge amount of work on controlled substances, and near the front of that section, they put together a controlled substance, says advisory committee. And if you look through the list of the people who are to be on it, and the duties, it's amazing how good a job they've done. I think I've been paying a lot of attention to this stuff. These guys did an extraordinary good job. And you got to go back, 32 years and say, How did they know the problems we were going to be facing today? And then since that time, the legislators have made 60 different attempts to modify the scheduled drug laws and so on. And as you all know from your experience, we do a fairly clumsy job because we don't look at the big picture and all the complex things that are going on. But this committee was supposed to do that. Wow. Look for disproportionate sentencing, changing of impact of drugs, our knowledge about them, effectiveness of treatment, and you've watched Kevin Meyer, Senator Meyer, very manfully try to keep us up to date with the things that are up. These folks were given the job to watch over that sort of thing and advise it. If you'll look in your packet, which is pretty complete, under 1171.120, they said that there is to decide and recommend substance should be added to, deleted from, or rescheduled in a schedule of controlled substances. The governor shall introduce legislation in accordance with the recommendations to keep all this stuff straight. Mm-hmm. Well, so as we've been trying to get after some of this stuff, Chuck found this passage back there, and we looked back at it and said, why didn't that happen? And to our utter astonishment, last fall, in a sentencing hearing, a defense attorney said in court, if the Department of Law and this commission had ever been instituted in doing their job, we wouldn't have had these disproportionate sentences that are forcing my client to face a mandatory sentence, you know, that's really disproportionate, and so on and so forth. And then, and you should have this. So this is the first one, plaintiff versus State of Alaska versus Demian Petillo, and anyways, you can find the numbers or I'll get them for you. But so this is her brief on this, and saying here my client is going to get this disproportionate sentence based on which is disproportionate because the Department of Law did not do what the legislature directed them to do to keep this stuff rational, proportionate, and fair. Then you've got in your packet, the state comes back and argues that, and it is Andrew Granick, Assistant District Attorney, and he argues that, in essence, you can't blame the state for not doing what the legislature told them because the legislature really didn't mean it. And he literally argues that the administration doesn't have to do what the legislature so clearly said because the legislative language was directive, not mandatory, and then says if the legislature had really meant what they said, they would have put in penalties for the department for not doing what the legislature told them to do. And this astonishing document is signed by Michael Garrity, our Attorney General. And so we started on the line of, wow, this should have been done. What can we do at least to resurrect it and get this kind of stuff going forward, which produced Senate Bill 186, which is before you. Now, our alleged legal department tells me that this shall and at least language here is sufficiently mandatory that that the administration will have to do it. I'd like to follow what the assistant district attorney said and put in penalties like Class C felony for the administration not following. So that's the dilemma we're in. And so the first thing, of course, we want is a very thoughtful overview of all of our controlled substance stuff to bring it into conformity with current knowledge and experience and help clean up our laws. Ms. Carpinetti, who I think the world of, and who had a delightful relationship. She's in an unfortunate position of having to represent this, and my remarks are not addressed at you, and probably not at most of the people in the current people in the Department of Law. But so we want this thing to get going. But Annie's been present at least two or three times when I have literally begged the Attorney General Assistant in charge of criminal stuff to go and do all the stuff, you know, the review of all these laws. And I begged the mayor and I begged the Attorney General. I said, hey, we're trying to do this, but you guys are the experts. Mm-hmm. You take it. Quit fighting this. You go do it. And I've been unsatisfied with the response. So reading in these legal documents, which I found fascinating, but one defense for the state is that if they didn't implement the Controlled Substance Advisory Committee, they could escape blame, in a sense, by having had substantial compliance. They had accomplished the same thing by another method, you know, and so, and at least that's how I read it. That's a question for you, Annie. Is there a record here, looking back over the last 32 years, where there's been a systematic effort to approach the accomplishing the mission that this Controlled Substance Advisory Committee was going to do?
Through the chair, let me just clarify one thing. The litigation that Senator Dyson is referring to was a motion on behalf of a defendant charged with a drug offense to declare all of our statutes unconstitutional. It wasn't necessarily just sentencing. It was their position that all of our drug statutes ought to be unconstitutional because this Controlled Substance Advisory Committee had not been formed ever. I mean, since 1983, it was never formed. And Mr. Granick's response was, you're correct. And no governor ever appointed any of these members, any of the members that the governor was had the authority to appoint. Apparently, just the very first year that it was enacted, there was money put in the budget. Since then, there has been no funding for this committee. And our position was, you just can't declare all these statutes unconstitutional because this committee has not been formed. The legislature has, in fact, taken action on our drug laws reasonably often in making decisions that the legislature believed to be correct. We don't have any objection to this change in language. I think it's stronger than current law, although the current law seems pretty strong to me. I think this is stronger, and hopefully that there will be funding and for this, and it will proceed. That's all I can say.
She said that carefully, all she could say, and I appreciate it. And you did not answer my question, which was, has the department substantially complied with the mission that was supposed to happen? Has there been a systematic effort, you know, to get our drug lines up to date, consistent, proportional, and so on?
Through the chair, well, you know, we do have, we have trainings, we have district attorney meetings every month. We talk about, you know, how our laws are working and whether they make sense under the circumstances. If a statute would come to our attention as being inadequate in some way, you know, we have the forum of introducing a bill through the governor to change it, which we have done over the years. We have done some review and mainly reacting to situations that seem incorrect in our law. I can't tell you whether we've had top to bottom thorough review of all of the statutes or the schedules in the drug laws. It's been a challenge just reacting to the new drugs that are coming available on the market. So
I've not seen in the 18 years I've been here a single bill coming from the governor's office, you know, to restructuring and rescheduling drugs and stuff. Mm-hmm. If there was one, I missed it. Mr. Kopp, you were going to say something? I'm sorry, I'm cutting you out here.
Yeah, no, if you want to have Mr. Kopp say something, then move the microphone over, Chuck, and
through the chair,
introduce yourself.
Through the chair, for the record, Chuck Kopp, staff to Senator Dyson. The duties of the committee, as the bill sponsor pointed out in AS 1171-100, it would be incongruous almost for the prosecution to carry this out, and I can say this with some personal experience, Mr. Chair. I certainly, for 24 years, was involved in the arrest and prosecution, catching bad guys, and that is the focus when you're on that side of the law. But there is a breadth of professional experience, and the duties require appropriate classification of controlled substance, recommending regulations for adoption by the Board of Pharmacy to prevent excessive prescription of controlled substance, evaluate effectiveness of controlled substance treatment programs, recommend to the court system alternatives to prosecution or imprisonment of offenders who have no prior criminal record involving controlled substance offenses, review and evaluate enforcement policies and practices of the Department of Law and Public Safety with regard to crimes involving controlled substances. And then it establishes, you know, the committee, basically three commissioners involved, a pharmacist, a peace officer, a physician, a psychiatrist, and two more public members, and requires that the committee meet twice a year. So the legislative intent was clearly to provide meaningful oversight of our controlled substance laws. And as the bill sponsor has said, it just simply has not happened. And as the bill sponsor is arguing, it has resulted in severe over-criminalization in many areas of the law. There is a recent quote from John Skidmore in the Daily News about the substance required, amount of cocaine required in any amount of material to be considered possession of cocaine, which simple possession is a Class C felony. He said it matters not the amount. It can be as little as 1/1,000th, and he's right. In fact, you could say he's wrong. It could be 1/100,000th. The law simply states that as long as it can be detectable in a narcotics test, you are guilty of simple possession. So that's where we're at in our law, and it's to the point where simple possession of one grain, let's say of cocaine, would be the same under the law as me pointing a handgun at one of your guys' heads and discharging it into the wall because I'm mad at you and I want you to know I'm mad, and I intend to put you in serious fear of your life being imminently taken from you. That is a Class C felony, the same as me possessing that tiny amount of drug. That is a Class C felony. And we have 20 examples for you in your packet of Class C felonies that under the law are equivocated to simple possession. And some of them, you'd be shocked. I mean, stealing a police car is a Class C felony. Stalking someone in the first degree where you continuously over time engage in a course of conduct by stalking a victim and you place them in fear of death and you possess a deadly weapon. That is the same thing as possessing the smallest iota of a Schedule 1 or 2A substance. We just give those as examples to say here we are in the law where we've so trivialized a misdemeanor that we've made many things a felony, and I don't think any one of us would say that a misdemeanor, we wouldn't tell our kids that, you know, up to a $10,000 fine or 2 years in jail is a slap on the wrist. Those are pretty serious. Mm-hmm. And we give people two shots at a DUI. You know, driving a lethal weapon, your second DUI is still a misdemeanor. Third time we say, now we're mad, we're going to make you, you've earned your felony, you have not meaningfully participated in your reform. So here's the state of the law today, and as the bill sponsor says, if we just had the professionalism of this commission overseeing the implementation of our controlled substances laws, we probably would have never got here. Individually as legislators, we don't have the expertise to focus on this and to look at the implications from a high view of everything we do. And right now we have a justice system that's at odds with each other. On one hand, prosecuting, criminalizing, incarcerating, and the other hand, trying to participate in meaningful reform and rehabilitation, and they seem to be at odds. And so we have some schizophrenia in the system, and this commission we think is an ideal tool. It's already in the law. It's already there. Let it go.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, and it's interesting, in the debate back in 1982, the committee notes, they said, at present, these activities, and it's the tension between good treatment and incarceration. You know, and it said there will always be a tension between those things, and part of the responsibility of this committee is to evaluate and recommend what works and the best course forward, and that balance between there. And at present, these activities are not coordinated. Law enforcement programs, treatment programs, and legitimate industry enforcement efforts are often pursuing competing goals and objectives. 1982. And so, I mean, it was clearly recognized. There was a fiscal note with the bill passed, and as Ms. Carpinetti said, wasn't funded in the future. You know, the responsibility for the law that was put in place should have been in the Attorney General and the governor's budgets, and probably wasn't. I doubt that the legislature went in there and took it out, you know, and so, and then for 32 years, probably inadvertently, administrations have come and gone, many of both parties, and gotten us, probably not intentionally, into this mess. And here, our predecessors, 60 times, have gone down there, tried to fix a little piece. Here I've been butting with my office, and a few others of you have been butting our heads here, and I'm very disappointed with some of the reaction from the Criminal Division Department of Law, not Ms. Carpinetti, and have fought us tooth and nail, you know, on it. And in addition, and my guess is you're going to support us on this and it will go forward, but particularly you all are attorneys, I'd like you to look at this back and forth and this Attorney General's defense that we should have put penalties in there if we really meant what we said, and I would suggest that be PCN numbers, that and so on. But I am so outraged by what the Attorney General's office would say. I'd like this committee to think about asking the Attorney General to come back and say to this legislature, you signed a document where you backed up what your assistant said about the basis on which the administration could ignore clear language from the legislature. Now, I appreciate that assistant attorney general was trying to defend their position in a case where the attorney was apparently asking for everything to be thrown out. You know, and I looked very carefully at those severability things. And if I was you and facing that, well, I would have said, yeah, the state didn't do what it was directed to do on that, but it doesn't invalidate all these laws that are in place, and a severability thing would have been. But anyways, I'm off reservation and preaching.
Senator Wilkowski had a question.
It's a great find, Senator Dyson. Yeah. And Chuck, it's pretty stunning, actually, that this has gone on for as long as it's gone on and no one has recognized it. We have 90% of our crimes that are committed in this state are substance abuse related. 90%+ of the people in the correction system have substance abuse problems. Yeah. I think having this in place would have made a huge difference. And so, you know, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, the second best time to plant a tree is today. So I guess my question for law is, it's clear. This is unambiguous. You have to set this up. And the committee shall advise the governor. This is unambiguous. And please tell me if you disagree with that. And I guess the question is, how do we move forward? How do we get this staffed up? Because I think we need this commission. There's just no doubt in my mind that we need it, and we need it today.
Through the chair, I agree with you. I think it would be a very valuable tool. I will say that, you know, it got away from us. I was surprised when this lawsuit was filed when I heard about it, when I went and looked at the statutes. I hope there aren't many others like that in our laws that we're missing. The fact that we didn't have this commission does not, I mean, our position in this lawsuit was that you just don't declare all of our drug statutes unconstitutional because of that, because these were adopted by you and amended by you. And even though they haven't been fine-tuned and reviewed by a commission, doesn't mean you didn't intend them to be in force. And that was our position in responding. The fact that there was a commission, even though it was not staffed or carried forth, does not mean that our laws are invalid.
Can we expect appointments and the creation of this committee this session? I still think it's probably not too late for us to confirm appointees for this.
Well, I will take it back to my superiors. Yes, that, I mean, I don't appoint them myself, but I will do my very best.
Right.
To have the people who are supposed to appoint them. Well, the governor appoints the members that aren't described by their office, so that needs to be done.
Mr. Cobb.
Mr. Chairman, just to in wrap up as far as our bill sponsor's perspective, and the comments from the House Finance Committee that he spoke from in 1982, they were concerned about the way our controlled substance laws were working at that time. At that time, 1 in 90 Alaskans were under the supervision of the Department of Corrections. Today, it's 1 in every 36 Alaskans. Mm. So we've gone almost up threefold, even though our population has only gone maybe 30%. So we're incarcerating at a 10 times higher rate compared to our growth. And our own data says that our primary incarceration drivers are misconduct involving controlled substance offenses, theft second offenses, and petition to revoke probation filings on felons on parole. So.
And thank you for some of the information that you've given concerning felony and misdemeanors. I might use that for some other homework that I'd have to do. Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
I think it was a good find. Certainly, the department can take its heat, but so can the legislature for not having dug this up somewhere along the line. So, but right now it looks like it's come back to light and should come back to life. It looks like to me. So the shell is much more directive, and it was less ambiguous in my view previously, but shall meet at least twice a year. So the question for the sponsor, I see where they gave a fiscal note that was a zero fiscal note. And according to the testimony, in order to assemble this committee, there was expected that there would be some money in it. So explain that part to me.
Mr. Chairman, I would submit the Department of Law gave it a zero fiscal note because they were anticipating just a decrement in their budget because it wasn't done the first time. It did come from the Department of Law.
That's
you're
the
correct,
cynical
Mr.
part.
It was a zero fiscal note. And I have it here. I'll show it to you.
I think there would be an expected cost that we might be able to pass on with the expectation to the Finance Committee, would be my guess. So at this point, zero fiscal note.
It's zero fiscal note.
And
Senator Dyson?
I would appreciate this committee not adding one, and I'd be glad to take on this very narrow area, Department of Law's word. And go forward. But if indeed it got pushed, I'd say, well, where was the 100-and-some K that was put in the budget in 1983?
Yeah.
And if you put that to work at 5-6%, you can get started with that one, and we'll see in the next budget cycle or two. But
can I?
Yes.
through the chair, I think. That that money has not been sitting around. It was sent back to the, since it wasn't used. I think that's what happens when funds like that are not used by us. Although, as I have said often, I am not an expert on budgetary matters, but I will double check on that. It should have been gone back into the general fund if it was not used.
It's kind of academic from my perspective. It may have gotten swept. I wouldn't be surprised if it got reappropriated to similar things at the time. But
Senator Dyson, is it your intention to move this bill up?
Yes, sir.
All right. I think we have a motion over here.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I move that we move Senate Bill number 186, /A, with accompanying zero fiscal note out of this committee and on to rules.
Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, Senate Bill 186 moves from committee. I'll take a brief of these while we take this. Come back to order. The staff had to run up and get the file folder on that. My apologies. Let's take up at this point Senate Bill 200, Senator McGuire. This is wrongful death of an unborn child. Senator McGuire, we laid this aside last time, and I think there was some further discussion that you wanted to have on it. Was there anything new? Was there any other testimony you had in mind?
I just simply wanted to put on the record that by way of damages, there was a question from Senator Wilikowski that on lines 2 through 4, the language are committed under usual and customary standards of medical practice during diagnostic testing, during therapeutic treatment, or while assisting with the pregnancy, should be considered in the same terms as Section 955-549, which defines limitations from healthcare provider services or medical malpractice. And so I just wanted to have that on the record. Our alleged legal said that that was important, in her opinion, to put that on the record.
Was there other questions that we had that came up on this one? Senator Wilikowski?
Yeah, just on the losses that could be recovered, and
yeah.
I see something here. So I know losses are capped at $400,000
yep.
In medical malpractice, or is that in all cases?
So,
Senator,
thank you. Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. So Section 917.010 defines non-economic damages that can be sought for personal injury and wrongful death, which includes compensation for pain, suffering, inconvenience, physical impairment. All claims for a single injury or death may not exceed $400,000. Then you also have Section 955-549, which would apply to damages and limitations if it were in the course and scope of medical malpractice. And then you have Section 955-580, which explains damages for wrongful death, some of which we believe will apply. Some of which may not. And so damages will ultimately be determined based on the preponderance of evidence and by a determination of the jury of the peers.
And I would just say, Mr. Chair, I think this is an area where, for sure, you don't want to limit damages. I mean, I think this is an area where we shouldn't set some sort of artificial cap on what people who undergo this this horrific actions. So I would advocate that we just remove the caps and let a jury decide what an appropriate number would be, Mr. Chair.
Senator McGuire, any thoughts on that?
Well, I just don't know how you would include it at this stage in the bill. What we've done is simply reference wrongful death, and again, in consultation with legal, we're not quite sure how it will play out in every circumstance, but we do have other sections of the statute that do include certain limits and certain calculations. So at this point in the bill, I wouldn't want to try and undo all of what's there.
Okay. Other questions, Senator Wilikowski? Anything else?
We have other people on the line, Mr. Chair.
No, I don't. I just asked if we had anybody else online. So at this point, I just wanted to make sure that the questions that we had asked the senator previously had a chance. And Senator, are those things that questions that you can get to the rest of our committee members?
Absolutely. I will, Mr. Chairman, I'll provide a copy of the questions that Senator Wilikowski asked and that I answered to the committee.
So thank you for bringing the bill forward.
Senator Wilikowski also, if I might, Mr. Chairman, requested a listing of all charges that had been brought, pleas, etc., based on the 2006 law.
Oh, yes.
And I do have a copy of that I will make available there were five different individuals involved in a total of eight charges so far.
Okay. Any other questions? Any other debate on the bill? Do I hear a motion to move the bill?
Yep. Mr. Chairman, I move that we move from Committee Senate Bill 200, that's 28LS1382/A, from committee with individual recommendations and attach fiscal note, if any.
Is there any objections? Attach zero fiscal note. All right. Senate Bill 200 to move from committee with individual recommendations and attach zero fiscal note. Please, members, stick by while we stand by while we sign up paperwork. On Friday, we have Senate Bill 170 by Senator Gardner. It's affirmative defense on prostitution. We will take up the child welfare confidential information, which was brought before us today, and some testimony on the campus firearm bill, Senate Bill 176. All right. With that, we're adjourned.